Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is show number 34, and this week's guest is Monica Danos, better known as Dr. Mars Rover. She comes to talk to us about her Housebound series and doing some hand coloring. Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is show number 34. And yeah, we're back. Andrew, we have, as always, we have Andrew, the Sultan of Swing Bartram, with us.
Oh, that's better that's better than Master of Disaster. Is that what you normally call me? I prefer Sultan of Swing. That's
okay, we'll do that
that's
one.
That's much more how I see myself.
Sweet. How are you, Andrew?
I've been a bit poorly all week, really. I was this time last week, I was coming down with a sore throat. And then I got a proper dose of man flu. Oh. And but I did drag myself into work a few days, and I coughed over people and sneezed over people.
I'm sure they loved it.
And they did. And then I went home. And I've got a sore throat now. So if I cough, I do apologize, listeners, that it's not very professional, but I've got a bottle of Ringwood Brewery Boondoggle, which is I can contest that it is a deliciously fruity craft blonde ale all the way from Southampton, and it's lovely.
Awesome.
So that should keep my voice lubricated, I think.
Okay.
And you've been a busy bee this week?
I have been. I have gotten back into work, and it's gone from...
That's a bummer, isn't it?
Yeah, it's all right. I kind of needed it. It was a lot of getting kind of bored, you know? It worked out good. I needed to get back up and get moving and get back to it. You know, the summer's over and the kids are back in school. So,
but as presumably your photography activity has reduced a bit.
It has a little bit, but not a lot, because I always have, you know, my camera with me. So, riding home, I'll see stuff from work. Riding to work, I'll see stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll stop and just take a picture real fast. So it's not too bad. I'm going out of town this weekend, so I'm really excited about that.
This
weekend.
Where are you off to?
The mountains. I'm going up to Asheville, the western part of the state.
Okay.
So I have 2.5 days to explore by myself. My wife is going to be in seminars and talks and
you're
everything.
You're going by yourself. Are you camping?
No, we're staying in a hotel at the place where they're having her work seminar stuff. We're staying at the same hotel there. It's really nice, actually.
Oh,
it's
so you're going with her, and then you're just swanning off in the daytime.
And she gets done about 5, just about dark, so it'll work out just about right. It's kind of our yearly, like, get out, you know, leave the kids here and kind of take a break and go out to dinner and order fancy stuff, you know.
You just lock the kids up in a cupboard, do you, somewhere?
No, we put them on about 15-foot-long ropes, 5-gallon bucket of water, 5-gallon bucket of Cheetos, and we're just like, we'll see you in a couple of days.
Can they get to the toilet, though? Because, you know.
No, somebody comes by and lets them out and walks them for a few minutes. So, our guest this week is Monica Danos. Did I say that right, Monica?
Well, I say it Danos, but that's okay.
We went through this, too. We went through this.
He doesn't listen, does he? I knew he'd butcher it.
No. Most people say it the way Corey said it, so it's okay.
I just call you Dr. Mars Rover.
Dr. Mars is going to say, everyone's going to know you, Monica, as Dr. Mars Rover.
That is actually true.
Yeah. And you do, like Andrew, don't you? You're more involved with Twitter.
Yes.
Because I remember when I was on Twitter, I talked to you a little bit.
That
here
was
and there.
Very brief, right?
Yeah, it wasn't very. I wasn't on Twitter for too long. I was just kind of like, you know. So
he can't keep up with it, Monica.
I can't.
Too much for his brain.
It is. It's too much. My phone is constantly going off because somebody said sure from a question 2 weeks ago from a post, and it's just I don't.
Well, you can turn that off.
I know you can, but at the time I had 3 Instagram pages. Andrew's like making me feel so bad about not being on Flickr, you know, and then trying to do the Facebook stuff, you know, so I was just like, Andrew.
Well, I'm not on Facebook, and I have an account, but I don't use it. And
right.
I don't use Instagram, so.
But Monica, you have to, now you've been on the podcast, Now you've been on the podcast. Well, you're starting to be on the podcast. Okay,
beginning of the podcast.
The beginning of it. You have to join our Lensless Podcast Facebook group because it's really cool. And we have 411 members now.
Oh, yeah.
And it's very interactive. And there's Todd Schlemmer from his Terrapin. And James Guerin pops up on there. And Mike Walker and all sorts of really interesting people. And it's very interactive. See, I don't really use Facebook at all these days, apart from access to two or three groups like the Negative Positives Facebook group and our Lensless podcast. So
that's me too. That's the same way I am.
Really just drop into it and
I will
join.
I promise.
You have to answer a question before I let you in. Okay.
Okay.
Some Facebook groups are really.
Is it tricky?
Yeah.
He won't tell us what it is. He's a secret.
And we don't let everybody in. Some people get rejected. Unlike Mike Gutterman and his Negative Positives podcast, he lets anybody in.
Any riffraff.
Any riffraff, yeah.
Any riffraff. We only want lensless riffraff.
As it should be.
So, well, we want to talk to you about some pinhole photography. Monica, do you... take a second if you want and just let everybody know a little bit about yourself, kind of touch on your background with pinhole photography
I want to hear all about the Mars program and your role in developing the rover.
Wait, doctor. Should I clear up my handle right now?
I think so. Yeah.
No, just leave it a mystery.
Not a real doctor. Think comic books. Despicable Me. it was a family joke from when my kids were little. In fact, we were trying to explain it to them recently. They're older now, and they were looking at us. My husband and I, like, what are you talking about? So, I got on Twitter. I didn't think I was going to actually tweet, so I didn't think too hard about my.
That's pretty much how Twitter works. Twitter works, doesn't it?
I think so. And I thought about changing it, and some of my Twitter friends were like, no, you can't do that. So I'm stuck with it.
Well, when
I think it's awesome.
It's really good. I first came across you several years ago, and I was intrigued. Who's this cool scientist lady who's using a film camera?
Tricked you.
There you go.
Okay, so about me, I grew up in Pennsylvania on the East Coast, northeast of Philly, and my mom's family was really into art, and she was going through a fine art program at the community college. They had to take a intro to photography class, and at that time, there was no digital, it was all film, and their first project was a oatmeal can pinhole camera. And I still remember it because it was just so cool. I had never seen any picture like that before, where it was kind of fuzzy but very distorted, and it just changed how everything looked. And that really stuck with me. And that was also where I found out about darkroom prints, and that's something else that really stuck with me. She didn't really get into it. She went back to painting. But I got a Pentax K1000 for one of my teen birthdays, probably 16 or Christmas. And I was interested in outdoor photography with that for a while. And when I became an adult, I took a workshop with a fellow named Ray McSavney, who was in the LA area when I was living there. And he got me into large format photography. And I subscribed to View Camera Magazine.
Mm.
And they had, in around 04, 03, they had an article on a photographer named Martha, I don't know if it's Casanave or Casanav. And she did she was doing a project using pinhole. The book is called Explorations Along an Imaginary Coastline. And it's photographed on the California coast. She's got a human figure in it who's dressed in 19th century clothes. But they're kind of pictorialist because of the person in it. But I was really struck by how different the pictures looked from what I was doing with my 4x5 camera, which was botanical studies. And I was sort of in a rut, and I was really taken with this project that Martha Kasanov did. And I was getting catalogs to either B&H or Freestyle, and they had these 4x5 pinhole cameras in there by, I thought it was called Santa Barbara camera, but I think it's really lensless, I'm not sure. And so I'm like, well, I have the film holders already. I'll get one of these and see how it goes. And that's kind of how I got into working with pinhole cameras.
Cool. That's cool.
So, and then I worked with that camera for quite a few years after moving to Seattle. The interesting thing about it was I was trying at first to do all the same things I did with the large format camera and realizing that those types of images for me didn't translate.
You mean like landscapes or?
Botanicals, like trying to take pictures in a garden where the details are important, but pinhole sort of, muddies the details. And so I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do with this. We moved to Seattle and we took a little jaunt to the Ballard Locks. So we've got the Puget Sound, and then there's Lake Washington, and there's something called the Ship Canal that connects them. And there's a locks in the neighborhood of Ballard that the ships boats move to go back and forth. And there's a lot of interesting boats and marine structures in that area. And so I had brought the pinhole, I had brought some Polaroid film so I could get some instant ideas on feedback from what was going on with the camera. And I pointed it at the water. I was amazed, and they were like a minute maybe exposures. And what really struck me is I was getting reflections that I didn't realize were there of the clouds. And there was a softening to the sky, and the structures of the boat building sort of anchored everything. Mm-hmm. And the details didn't matter. It was all about feeling and mood. And I really like that. And so I pursued that kind of going to parks around the area for quite a while. And because we have a lot of lakes and the sound and various bodies of water. And I did that for a couple years with the 4x5 pinhole. And then I got kind of tired of that. And I branched out, and now I have lots of pinhole cameras. Different kinds. This
seems to be the case with everybody. Don't worry.
You can't stop.
You can't stop.
I was, I think the thing to dive into first really with your images has to be houseband and the, you know, the use of light, the use of shadow, the use of, I mean, it's perfect for pinhole. I'd like to understand a little bit about the houseband series, but I was just the first one I saw. I think you were posting some a while back, but they weren't called houseband, but they could have been houseband because they were sort of.
No, it goes back. It wasn't. It didn't start as a project. It kind of developed into a project. The story I have in the latest Let's Explore magazine has a little blurb about my story is about the first couple of pictures.
I haven't got that, so we for the benefit of myself and probably Corey and anyone else who's listening, do you want to give us a synopsis of that?
Hang on
really fast. So if you're listening to this at home and you want to follow along with as we're looking at these pictures, we're just on Monica's Flickr page under Housebound or album that's Housebound, right?
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. So it started with, I was in a bit of a rut with the outdoor stuff. And, I had been using a Holga pinhole for a while in 6x6 too.
Is that the wide angle pinhole camera?
No, this is not the wide angle. That's actually key to what happened.
Right.
With my project. The shutter got sticky, and I tried, you know, WD-40, and I broke a cable release, and I really missed being able to. Yeah, you press the cable release, and the shutter wouldn't go, and the release eventually broke. It was very frustrating.
Yikes!
And I liked having that small 6x6, and I did what I thought was appropriate research, and got the Reality So Subtle 6x6, which if anybody who's used it does not have the same field of view as the Pinholga.
No, it's really wide.
It's really wide, and I'm not used to shooting really wide. I've never shot really wide with any of my cameras.
Gotta get close.
And my very first pictures were outdoor things. I was like, oh no, this isn't what I envisioned. Yeah.
Right.
What am I going to do with this camera? I took it to our first family trip to Europe, to England and Wales. And I thought it would be useful for building. So I did a couple things when we were at St. Paul's Cathedral in London with it. And then, we took it to Wales, and my daughter, I forget how old she was at the time. She's 11 now, so she might have been 8. she needed downtime really badly, and she thought she wasn't feeling well, but she needed downtime. We were doing too much, so she and I stayed behind in the rental house, and I was just losing my mind. My husband and other daughter were at a castle somewhere. And
we have lots of those.
I'm like going crazy, stuck in this rental cottage. So I'm like, I'll take some pictures and see how they come out. There was a window at the top of the stairs, and the way the light came in and framed the window and the ceramic thing on the window was really interesting. So I did a shot at that. I did some other shots of the window, and I thought that would just be it. And when I got the film back, there was a lot of black. I'm like, I'm not sure how I feel about this. But one of the things about Twitter is I post all sorts of stuff that I'm not sure about, because I love getting the feedback from the film community, and a lot of people tend to see the things that I'm not seeing because I'm stuck. I've got stuck in my head what it ought to be.
Yeah.
And there was a really positive reaction to this photograph. So I started thinking about using it indoors. And then a couple months later, one of the film parties, the FP4 film party, had started. And up to that point, I was sort of a only Delta 100 or HP5.
Oh, yeah.
I was sort of like, you stick to your two films and you know what to expect. And that way you don't have to spend as much time with the light meter, because you have a feel for the light.
You know what it's going to do.
And you know what it's going to do, and you can sort of know your exposures without having to mess around so much. I think it was Sean Mosmode who was running the FP4 party handle. He kind of twisted my arm into joining, and like, I don't have time to go out. The weather isn't always bad. I mean, part of the problem with photographing outside is when the clouds are perfect, you've got something else you have to do, kid or job related. Or when you do have time to go out, the weather's just not interesting. We can have fantastic clouds here, or we can have really flat, boring, gray skies. And that can be very frustrating for exercising my creative side. So I was like, oh, I promised I'd participate in the FP4 party. What am I going to do? And the light was coming in through the window and hitting these curtains in a really interesting way. I'm like, oh, this is something where I can get the camera really close and just see what happens. And so I sort of approached it like that. And I took a bunch of pictures for the FP4 party just in the house with our brief burst of sunlight when I had moments to spare, whether it was before work or before the kids got home or, you know, these little time slots. And when I shared them, there was a really nice, helpful to me response. And Richard Pickup on Twitter was like, you know, this could make a really interesting series. And so that's where I sort of like, well, I'll just try this longer and see what happens. And I was sort of in the see what happens mode for a couple months. And then I eventually said, well, I'll just call it Housebound because I'm doing this because I am stuck here at home at these in-between points in my day. And sure. But that's my time to do something creative. So
did you shoot this series Housebound all on FP4?
No, and this is my first project where I have gone all over the place with film. I've got some on PanF for when there was the PanF party. I mean, a lot of them were right. Shot during the film parties.
Oh, cool. Oh, yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, just because it kind of forced me to take the pictures, too.
Yeah.
So, and it was a way to participate in that film community party and then add to the project. And it was a really good exercise because I did things that I wouldn't normally photograph. True. There was one I was taking of my garage door because we have this climbing rose growing over the top, and I was interested in the shadows that the sun was casting through the rose leaves. Mm-hmm. And because of the wide angle and the way the sun was, I accidentally caught my own silhouette. And my first reaction was like, ah, that's not what I wanted. But again, I got a lot of positive, constructive responses, and I started adding my shadow to some of the pictures in the project because of that. And
right.
And that added something interesting to the project, too.
I think those images where you add shadows of yourself, I think are really great. I have a book. I think it's Lee Friedlander. He did mm-hmm. one called Self Portraits. Well, it's really just mostly vague reflections of him in windows or shadows on the floor. But he uses the image, the shadow of himself, as integral to the composition. And that's a great book if you ever...
I will look for it. They are surprisingly difficult. So that the shadow looks like a human and is interesting to look at and not just a blob, because it's very easy. It's more likely your shadow is going to look like a blob.
A blob
sort of like amorphous.
Right.
Then something distinct.
What this picture from that series Housebound is, looks like you put your camera on the counter and then there's a, like a plate drying rack.
In your kitchen.
Yeah, in your kitchen maybe. And there's chili peppers on the tiles on the back, in the background.
Peppers. Which album are you in?
Housebound.
Housebound.
The one on the drying rack with the reflective surfaces. And then there's somebody sitting in a chair. Yeah, it's probably your husband.
I thought that would be fun. Okay. I wasn't sure. Yeah, yeah. I wasn't sure if I was going to have it lined up correctly, too. That one
you
was...
got it.
Interesting. Yeah.
That's awesome.
I put the camera on some like wood blocks, the kinds that little kids play with. We have a couple left. And I have that sticky tack, that blue tack stuff, which that's the best tool to have in your pinhole box. So I like stacked one or two of those blocks and I stuck the camera on that. And I think I set up the chair so that I could have at least sort of maybe have it set up properly.
You got it. I was looking I'm looking at the lids and I'm looking for your camera and I'm like, she must be a doctor, a mad scientist, because her camera's not in the reflection. She's a witch. Are you a vampire? No.
It's all about the angles. Yeah, that's totally. A physics thing.
You see, you are a doctor. You're a doctor of physics and light manipulation.
Not.
Your title is just getting longer and longer, man. You're going to be.
You see,
all knowing and all seeing is what we're going to start calling you, doctor.
I have to say, Monica, I'm disappointed now on two fronts. Shall I tell you?
Sorry.
So I'm disappointed that you're not actually a doctor, and you're. And I'm disappointed. And this.
Should I change my handle, Andrew?
No, you're fine. This this series, which I love, I mean, I've been following for ages. I just envisage you. I thought you'd like had some road accident or something, and you couldn't get out of the house, or you'd had like a massive, you know, nervous breakdown or something. And this was your way of dealing with all that angst as it's built up. But it was just like shots of.
It makes you feel any better. I have a lot of angst if I don't do something creative.
Yeah, me
I
too.
I do too. I get like stir crazy. I'm just like, I get mad at myself. I'm like, come on, what are you doing?
I think it builds up. I was talking to somebody else about this and I was like, it's like starving for me.
Yeah,
it's, you know, it kind of bugs you at the beginning, but as the stretches of time go longer, you get really starving feeling. Like just something is wrong physically and emotionally.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, you and a previous guest, Andrew Sanderson, whose book, Home Photography? House Photography? Oh, I forgot what it's called now. Anyway, look, go back if you haven't listened to that. Listen to Andrew. He published a couple of books, and one of them is Home Photography.
Okay.
And immediately when we started talking to him, and I'd had his book for a year or two, and I saw your images, it's like you just read his book, because he talks about getting inspiration from just sitting at your kitchen table and watching the way light plays. I went on a workshop, a print workshop, mm-hmm. with John Blakemore. And John, if you're not familiar with his work, he's a master printer. And he was very famous in the 90s for his series with tulips. And he studied tulips over and over again. And he photographed them.
What's his name?
John Blakemore.
Okay, I'm writing this down.
Yeah, Blakemore. And, okay. And his tulip series, he first sat there in his kitchen and he saw the light falling on this bunch of tulips that his wife had bought.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought, oh, that would make an interesting picture. And he made a picture with mostly he shot with a Crown Graphic, I think, and FP4 and ID11 diluted 1:1 for 8.5 minutes. I know this because I've spoken to him. But he studied this, and this one picture of his tulip, it then kicked off this massive series. And find his books. He's put a retrospective out of all his work. But he's got a printing book as well, if you can get hold of that, John Blakemore's print workshop.
Okay.
And he talks about, and he doesn't just talk about the way he constructed the image. He talks about his thought process. He's very much into metaphors in photography. He references Minor White and who else does he reference? There's some others I forget. But he's very much into the way photography can speak to you through toying with your emotions. But this series on tulips, he explored lots of double exposures, but really clever double exposures. He became obsessed with tulips and dyeing tulips. And he made these beautiful fiber prints, selenium toned fiber prints, which he got on his workshop. He got some of these out and was showing us, you know, and we were just blown away. But, you know, he just took his inspiration from things around him.
Well, you can pass the same thing every day and you can just ignore it, or you can start paying attention to it and see how that thing changes every day with how the sun changes in the sky every day, or whether or not there's clouds or yes clouds. And you were saying you were disappointed. And one of the things I want in my work right now is for everybody, also for others, to find their own story. I don't want to tell you what you should see. Sure. I sort of just want you to find your
Well, that's kind of the definition of, well, not the definition, but a good way of saying, you know, fine art. Like, you're presenting, you know, something to them. This is my idea of it, and whatever you want to come out of it is how you perceive it, and what you come up with it is your own.
And if I can get you to spend enough time that that you have an emotional reaction or some sort of reaction, then I've done my job. Then it's
good or
successful.
Bad.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what it is, but you're spending that time with it. And that's what's important to me.
And I think things like the inclusion of shadows, of chairs, of flowers, of your dressing, your bathrobe, dressing gown hanging up, all those things taken by themselves are so very evocative. It's the absence of people, but it's the things that people use day in, day out. But just, you know, immediately gets me thinking, well, what's the story behind that? You know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, good.
Yeah, sure.
And they're all on prints, aren't they? This
yes.
Is, the other thing that really strikes me about your work, Monica, is that the stuff you're posting is pretty much, I would imagine, apart from maybe some of the color ones, unless you're printing color.
No, I don't print color.
You are a wizard now.
are print scans. Now, I go through phases of posting print scans. I don't spend nearly enough time in the darkroom, but I get so impatient. I've been scanning stuff today and posting stuff because I thought, oh, I'd quite like to share that, you know, or I did a blog today from the Littlest Holger camera that I'd been using, and that's now gone to Isabel Curtis in Denmark. But I thought, as I was scanning these prints, these negatives, these HP5 negatives, I thought, these should be prints, you know, but it was just easier for me to bang some scans out, you know, and I look at your work and I thought, man, I should just... I should take a leaf out of your book and do more prints, really, because I have the darkroom sitting outside. You know?
Do you have, for these prints, Monica, that you're doing, like the Seattle series, there's the Seattle Great Will of, I guess you shot in 2016. I love this shot, too, with the rail just at the very bottom of the corner with the rain droplets on it.
Is that Seattle Studies?
Is that Seattle Studies?
Yeah.
Is that the one you're in?
Sorry. Yep, that's what I'm in. Then the Seattle Great Wheel down towards the bottom.
Oh, the Great Wheel. That one is hard to print.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, I mean, are you just, do you have a 4x5 enlarger or are you just making contacts?
Yeah, I have a 4x5 enlarger.
Oh, man, you're so lucky. I want one.
Me
so
too.
Bad.
Me too.
Not me. I'm not in the group. I'm not the cool guy.
What do you have, Monica?
I think it's an Omega.
Yeah.
It's a monster.
I have a De Beer 504, and that's big.
Okay.
What size print can you make with that thing? Can you turn it so you can shoot on the wall, you know, and make humongous prints with it?
I probably could, but I haven't.
No, me neither.
I have tried, the biggest I've tried is 16 by
20.
And I did not enjoy printing. Get big. They're just awkward and not every pinhole, because you're blowing it up, even when you're starting with a 4x5 negative. I mean, some things turn out really well, and some things just break up too much.
Sure. And then 8x10 is like the perfect size.
I like 7x7 for when you're working in medium format, and 8x10 is for the 4x5. And for the most part,
do you have a standardized paper size, Monica?
I usually use 8x10 paper. I do some 11x14, but I've been doing that less and less.
I've stumbled upon that weird Ilford size, 9.5x12, I think.
No, they don't have that here. They just have 8x10, and they have 11x14, and then they have the 16x20.
Yeah, I do a bit of 16x20, but that sort of in between 9.5x12, I've settled on. I do 8x8, but it's just a nice side. You can get a nice inch board around the outside. You know,
9.5x12 is perfect for 35mm, isn't it?
I don't know, maybe
because it gives you like the 3:2 view, and
I don't print much 35mm.
I don't want to insult anybody, but we have a running joke that's tiny format.
I don't. But when you take a 35 millimeter negative and you enlarge it on 8x10, you have to crop it.
Yeah.
Just a little bit, but.
You do a different size, right? Yeah, I can't remember what. Size. It's been too long for me.
Sure.
I'm not really making any prints from 35 mil negs these days. It's mainly 120 and 4x5. And with square format, I'm probably shooting. I think I'm making prints on that odd size paper, probably 8 inches by 8 inches. You know, and that's just a nice size. And on 8x10, I'm down to 6 inches by 6 inches, and so it invites you in a little bit. There's all sorts of issues, all sorts of theories around print size, aren't there? But you know, I quite like the relatively small sizes.
Well, 8x8 does looks nice in a 11x14 mat. 8x10 is kind of tight, isn't it? 8x10 with 8x8 is
yeah.
So
there's some awesome. there is some science. Our doctor would know this. There is a science behind,
but there isn't doctor. One here.
The doctor, where's the doctor?
Dr. Masrova would know that if you look at the theory of viewing images, there is an optimum viewing distance for the print size, and it's something like, don't quote me on this, 2.5 times the diagonal distance. So if you measure, that's where you're supposed to position yourself from. So when you go to a gallery, you take a tape measure with you.
Yeah.
All the clever.
Really?
All the, yeah.
Have
all
you
the,
done this?
Yep. Yeah, you have to take a tape measure with you, and you measure the diagonal, and then you times it by 2.5, and you pull it out the tape measure, and you stand at that distance. And if anyone walks in front of you, you just hit them out of the way, slap them around the head.
With your tape measure as it's out, just frap them with it, frap. So you say, put out your knuckles, frap.
That's true, though. You see, you're amazed at the things I know, aren't you, Corey?
Well, that's, when I was in photo school, we would have little shows, and that's what some people would do. They'd be like, I'm going to print as big as I can. They would like turn the enlargers in the sideways, and they would put these big giant prints up, and people were like, oh, these look horrible. And I was like, you're standing 5 feet away from it. Yes. You know what I mean? You have to be 20 feet away from it for it to be like, how for it to look. And then the same thing with smaller prints, people are doing 5x7 and they're standing away from it. They're like, oh, that print's so small. Well, you should be 3 feet away from it. You know what I mean? Like, you got to kind of like think about
Think that small prints invite the viewer to be close? Or do you think there are people who just insist on looking at it from a distance?
I was just, I did some printing for a guy who just had a show, David, and the whole show was nothing but contact prints. It was called Tiny Topography. And I mean, people were doing 35 millimeter contact prints. And when you came into the show, you were handed a magnifying glass. So like you had to step right up to the wall and look at it, you know, like he was trying to, you know, kind of, and I sent him a bunch of pinhole contacts for that. And it's a cool idea that instead of trying to print big and making these humongous art prints, you know, that you just, if you really want to look at it, you know, like step up and look at it. So you could like get as close to him as you wanted to, without having to worry about that viewing distance, you know, if you were doing, you know, humongous prints. So. But it's a cool idea. I wish I could have made it to see the show, because there was a lot of photographers.
Where was that? I remember you talking about it.
It was in San Antonio, Texas. Oh, okay. He's based in San Antonio. He's on Instagram as the lowest fidelity. I can't remember David's last name to save my life, man. But he's a really cool guy. He does a lot of stuff. So he's the one that kicked off the. Well, he didn't kick it off, but one of the first guys that I saw doing it that got me interested in it was printing on the Ilford postcards.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. You know, he would just print up a whole box of them of one image, and he's like, "Give me your address, and I'll send you one." You know, so
gets expensive.
That.
It can be. And said, "Hey, if you want to print, just let me know." And suddenly, I had like 40 postcards to send out.
That takes a lot of time, too.
Now, I stuck to it. First of all, I said to people, well, you choose an image. And then actually, I said, no.
Just pick one image and send it to everybody.
So I think in the end, I picked two or three images and I worked with those.
God, I wish I'd have gotten a picture of the fins.
I can still send you one. What did I send you?
I think you sent me a picture of the fins.
Yeah. So all this talk about prints, Monica, for the listeners who don't know, you're the doctor behind the print party.
I did the print party once. A few times, actually.
You did.
Two times.
Yeah,
you
I
did.
Haven't. I haven't. Twice, I yeah. kept threatening to take part, but never have.
You done. Never.
I was going to put some salt prints in. Did you know I did salt prints?
Do you know that?
I do know that you did.
Andrew is the doctor of salt prints, actually.
I know. I'm. That's something I want to try because of seeing your salt prints.
Yeah.
You can still use the tag. No, nobody's going to stop you from using the hashtag.
Well, Dr. Salt
it's
prints.
It's print party forever.
There you go.
Yeah. Are you? Like, so the FP4 party, not party, started, and I think I got involved in that, and then there was a few others, and I get a bit stressed when all these deadlines suddenly, so I kind of left it alone. And then your print party...
Well,
started,
so it wasn't just me. And it was me and Printer Attic, at Printer Attic on Twitter, Roy.
Okay.
And what had happened was, so often when there's a... film party, we talk about it at home. I'm like, oh, I'm shooting for the film party this week. And they always tease me. There's like, well, I'm like, there's shoot week, there's develop week, there's share week, whatever. They're like, well, when is print week?
Print week, yeah.
Like, well, there ought to be a print week. And I said something about that. We're always like, let's have a print party. I'm like, okay. But print party, the handle with the Y was taken. By somebody who doesn't even appear to be using it.
Ah, bummer.
Curse his eyes.
So Roy respelled it. So that's why it's been Partey.
Partey.
So is it now? Is it now just an ongoing hashtag thing, or will you have specific times going forward where you'll have like an autumn print Partey and a spring?
It's kind of random because we did a cyanotype party over the summer. Oddly enough, we had more participation. I can't remember if we were doing the print party in March or February. I think we had more cyanotype participation in the winter than we did in the summer.
Yeah, wow. They've got their UV. They've got their UV tubes, haven't they?
I know.
Inside their houses.
There were some people had built some really interesting UV tables for doing their cyanotypes.
I love cyanotypes. I need to.
It was...
Have you done pinhole with cyanotypes? I know James Guerin is. If you
can you? Hunt...
Oh yeah,
yeah. James
with the cyanotype in the pinhole.
Oh, I don't know.
No. He's using the negative.
Yeah, I have tried. He's using negatives. I have. Does he do? Does he do a digital negative from a scan of a pinhole negative?
He's using his negative out the camera.
Because you mentioned this great wheel picture, and I was actually trying to do a cyanotype of that, and I was having a really hard time.
Well, I think it's a lot of contrast. I mean, you've got like,
but that can help though. That can help. Overexposed, and overdeveloped negatives are apparently best. And so when I don't use digital negatives because, quite frankly, I can't be asked. But,
I've looked at the directions. I was like, forget this.
Yeah, it seems my head. But you're a doctor, so you should be able to understand the instructions because they're quite complicated.
One would think, but no.
But I try and just pick negatives and think, that looks like I've given that some welly in the developer. And sometimes they work well and sometimes they don't. But I've not really shared many of my salt prints because of the abuse I'll probably get once I start doing it.
I won't. Come on, just do them.
But it did occur to me the other day. What's stopping you? What's stopping me salting the paper, putting the silver nitrate on, loading it in a pinhole camera, and
seeing what happens?
Going outside, because you can. You know, when you're doing this stuff outside, you can peel back the glass, can't you, and look at how the print's going. So presumably, depending on the design of the pinhole camera, if it's homemade, you can just open it up and check how the image is going. You know. And then put the lid back on again. So I don't know if anyone's actually tried putting sensitized alternative type prints in pinhole cameras.
Let us know how it goes.
Try it with your anamorphic camera.
Well, with a truffle cam. Yeah.
Yeah. Your Bon 10.
I might do. Yeah. I might do because that would be perfect. I could, although it takes a bit.
I would guess you would need a lot of time.
Because a normal sun print can take ages, can't it?
Ten minutes in full sun.
That'll be your speed then, Andrew. You can just put it outside.
It'd probably take all day at least, wouldn't it?
And then everything's going to change as the day. Let us know.
Oh, you're complicating things. Don't rain on my parade. But think of the wonderful art I'd create with it, with all this changing time. It would be great. I'm going to try it in the summer. We don't get
you
much
ought sun. To.
I will.
But I think Roy had a poll out for doing another print party, and he was looking at February, March, or I don't know if I can find it right now. January, February, or March is what I feel like was on the poll. Mm-hmm. But and he was running it for 6 days, so I don't know if you still have time to log your vote. Oh, there's 3 hours left.
Oh, is it? Oh, I'll do it. No.
Oh, wow.
We won't be talking that long. I'll go on. After I've eaten my chicken pie, I'll go and do it. So the other two things that I've been really struck by looking at your work in more detail, Monica, is is your hand colouring. You haven't got a lot of it, but you've done some hand colouring and combination printing. Now, these are some things that I just kind of forgotten about. You know, I've done some hand colouring in the past, and it's a lot of fun. And I have combined the odd negative. So I was particularly interested with your combination prints, whether you have a particular finished image in mind, or you're just going through negatives and seeing what works together.
Both.
Because you have an album. And you
sure
you have an album.
Sounds
an
good, album. Andrew. Great.
Your multiple. There's a multiple print
multiple
album.
Print album.
Yeah.
So this is sort of something that's simmering on the back burner, and it takes a lot of time, which is partially why I'm not doing more of it. And I keep getting distracted. I'm really good at self-distracting. I had done collage way back in a high school art class, and the collage assignment was to use textures, and we had been given well-known paintings to use as the structure of the picture that we were supposed to do a collage off of. And I don't even remember the artist that my painting was of, but it was like a boat at sea. And I really liked how it came out. And I really liked the idea of using texture as structuring
layering.
An image. And so I kind of was playing with coming back to that idea with these. So I went around purposely making when I first got my Bronica, and some of these are with pinhole too, though, I didn't really know what to do with it. So I'm like, oh, I'll just take a bunch of texture pictures and see what happens. So I'm looking for pictures that have interesting lighting and texture with the idea that I would eventually use it for a collage type.
This output. Picture that you have of the fallen sky with the rocks and the boats, the sailboats, that's a great picture.
Thank you. Yeah, I
like
that one.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I do too. That's great.
So I took the skyline separate. I took the rocks separate. I wasn't exactly sure which thing. So when I'm taking the pictures, I'm not sure which things I'm going to combine, sure. But I take things with the idea that it will be combined. So pictures, things with lots of blank spaces, but something interesting in it.
It almost looks like the rocks are the clouds and they're reflecting in the water.
Thank you. Yes.
You know
I really
mean?
Do
like
how
it's
that
really
came
cool.
out.
Yeah. That shot came out great.
And some of these in here are not, and so that one particularly, I'm exposing, and these are done in the darkroom. So I'm exposing, I make proof prints of the single negatives to see how they come out straight prints. And then I start by deciding which picture needs to be prominent or if they want to share time. So if I think it's shared, then I'll do a sample where it's half the original time for each one. Where I'm putting, I only have one enlarger, so I'm putting the paper in one of those light safe boxes in between, sure. And I'm moving the negative back and forth in between the print. And so I'll do probably one where I have the time for each thing and see how the layer comes out. And then I have to figure out if I need to rotate the texture image in the carrier before I continue.
But then you're sandwiching the negatives together, are you? And then just
I am swapping them back and forth.
Why don't you sandwich them, or do you get?
Because then you're forced to having them have the same time.
And depending on the negative,
you might not want to do that. And also, I might need to do some sort of dodging and burning and contrast control.
How are you keeping track of where your registration is? If you're not really bothered if there's something you wanted in the sky.
I'm not bothering if it's slightly off because the one is one negative at a time. So I don't start with the rocks and then put in the city and then go back to the rocks. I figure out what I need to do with the rocks, do the rocks, figure out what I need to do with the city skyline, and then print that part. And it's really fun. It's a really interesting process that's exhausting, but makes me really happy.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The view from a bridge, 2012, with the looks like the tree trunks, you know, have been cut with the rocks and the water running through them.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so that one's a slightly different process. That was one, and I want to go back to doing these
overlapping.
Overlapping
exposures. Yeah.
So this was with a pinhole gun, and I wouldn't wind it all the way. I'd wind it part of the way. I was sort of this one. I actually had a concept from before I took the picture. I'm interested in emotion and emotional content. And I'm not interested in something static. I really want a photograph that feels it has movement. So I'm sort of interested in how, when you look at something, you don't just stare at it. You might move your head, you might move your eyes, you look in different places when you're looking at something. So this is the idea behind this, and I'm not sure it always works, is to kind of not wind all the way to the next frame, just partial wind, and perhaps move the camera, pan it slightly, and so get that sense, I'm attempting to get that sense of how we look at things. And how it feels to look at things where you're not just staring at something. Right. And since my pinhole broke, and I'm putting together I'm converting a AGFA folder to see if I can get that working so I can pick this project back up again.
Was it Toby or Alex? Toby, Toby. He did a blog post on it recently. His AGFA pin.
Yes. Yeah. I call mine the pinfold, and he calls his pinfold or something like that.
Yeah.
It was James from Reality So Subtle who suggested I try that because I asked him if he was going to make a 6x6 with a less wide view. He said no. But
these overlapping images with, I've forgotten the lady's name. I think her name is Amy, but that's not her Flickr handle. She does loads of these images like this, but with a Holger, with a lensed Holger.
Oh, okay.
I don't
think I know her.
Oh, for goodness sake, I can't think of her. I'll try and find it and let Corey know. But she does. It's pretty much all she does, and I think some of the time she's using a filter with a. Either diffused edges or clear center. I can't remember now, but not always. But she does a lot of these staggered images, and she recommended a book that explores all sorts of ways of seeing. And I've got it on my shelf. I've got it on my shelf in the other room because she recommended it to me, and and I haven't got it here because I didn't know we were going to be talking about it. But I'll try and I'll send the details to Corey, so you can put it in the show notes, Corey.
Yeah, I'd like to know.
And okay. I'll try and find the lady Amy, who's what her Twitter handle is.
All right.
Yeah, I would like that.
Cool.
And the hand. So also the hand coloring, which is something I haven't done in years and years and years. You want to talk to us a little bit about that? Because that's
it goes along the collage theme.
Yeah.
So it's sort of I don't do it much, but it can impart some more surrealism. So that's why I was playing with it. And it's kind of challenging to work with because they tell you to not use glossy paper and to use either matte or semi-matte, which has a lower contrast. And because the pinhole has, especially when it's a pinhole, that has a lower contrast. So trying to print and then get the tones right for hand coloring, you need a very kind of specific type of image. But when you get it, you can get something and take the surrealism another step. So that's why I enjoy doing that. At one point, I had the crazy idea that I was going to photograph textures and hand color them and cut them up and do real collage. And every time I think about the amount of work involved, like, no, I don't think I can do that. It would never get done.
What are you using, photographic dyes or watercolors, or could the dyes seep into the texture of the paper?
Are the oils.
Mm.
I have a set of dyes and I haven't gotten the hang of them yet.
Yeah. I think that's what I used in the past.
You use the dyes. These are the oils. So you put a layer of some sort of primer down and then you apply it with cotton. You make brushes out of cotton and skewers, and you sort of push the oil around to make it smooth. And then you can also pick it off the paper, so you can kind of control how intense your color is going to be by how much oil, colored oil, you let stay on there.
Right.
Does that make any sense?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a technique you don't see much in evidence on social media. There's probably a Flickr group out there for hand coloring, but I don't know. And I've also found the lady I was struggling with, Amy, goes under the handle of dog, DOG, _ dreams, DREAMZZZ. Amy Dog Dreams. So the most recent pictures she's putting up there are a couple of satanic hipstomatic pictures, which we'll gloss over. But if you just go back a few, you can see some, I think probably with a Holger, overlapping, or Holger 120N Tri-X T76.
I can't find her.
She's an Amy. If you Dog Dreams. DOG _ DREAMZZZ. But if you just type in Amy, there's a picture of her face on the side. And
well, I think that only works if you're following her.
Does it? Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So
you have to hunt for her.
I'm going to have to hunt. Or you could just
tag
me in one of her pictures.
Or you're a doctor, have your intern do it.
Yeah, so.
Well, it's interesting because the thing with hand coloring is I think a lot of people associate it with a certain style of portraits, a certain style of greeting card. And right. So I have the feeling of perhaps not a lot of people try it or think of the other directions that it
possibilities.
Can go.
Possibilities.
The other possibilities. Though I think Andrew Sanderson has a book on hand coloring.
He does. That's one of his, he's got the one on home photography. He's got the one on night photography. And then he's got a one which covers various other alternative processes, which I think includes hand coloring. I don't have that book. That's the one I don't have.
I just got that one.
There you go.
A couple of months ago. But I haven't gone through it all yet.
I'll add it to my wish list.
You do that, Andrew.
Well, we have enjoyed having you on, Monica.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, this is awesome. We maybe Andrew will start getting to hand coloring his salt prints.
There's an idea. What kind of paper
do you use for those? Is that watercolor paper?
It is, yeah. I don't think it's nothing special. I don't think it's probably a 300 gram. What do they call it? It's that sort of. It's fairly heavy paper, and it's got a mild texture on it. I've experimented with some. In fact, whatever I've used has tended to work really.
So you could watercolor on it.
You could. Yes.
You wouldn't need any special.
No, you'd be good at it because you're a proper. Paint. You're a proper artist.
I'm not a proper artist.
You are. I love you. Violets and fixers. Says, "Hey, mom, what you taking a picture of? I don't see anything."
That's I've written that down in my research notes. I wrote that down as a topic of discussion. What you're taking a picture of? I don't see anything. Isn't that just so true? What are you pointing your camera at that for?
Yeah, I get it all the time.
And from total strangers too. Not just your kids.
Mm, that's brilliant. So no, you're a proper artist. So you could do salt printing, and add some color to it.
Colored salties.
I have tried putting an ink wash on a T-tone cyanotype that I felt needed something. So it was okay. It was just all right.
Yeah. Just all right. Oh, man.
So are we there?
Yeah, we're there.
I think so. So we look forward to the print party with you and Roy at some point. And what else do we look forward to? We look forward to lots more Housebound, even though you're not Housebound.
You can find your own story, Andrew.
So for those out there who live in a vacuum and don't know who you are, where would you like people to go to see more of your work?
Well, there's always on Twitter, because that is where I often post things that are incubating. So I'm, as we've said, at Dr. Mars Rover, not a real doctor, on Twitter. I'm on Flickr. That's where I kind of throw out stuff that's finished, but not necessarily tightly organized. I'm an analog photographer there. Analog spelled the American way, all one word.
The wrong way.
And then I have a blog for my more finished projects, which is the Smell of Fixer. Is it .wordpress?
Yeah.
.wordpress.com.
I use Odorless Fixer though, so there we go.
Well, I think it probably still smells.
Somebody was there was a thread on the Negative Positives Facebook group earlier today about selenium or selenium toner.
Oh gosh, so,
And I use that a lot. And I open the door to the dark room, but and someone said, "Oh, you got to wear these industrial size respirators." And I said, "Well, how do you know when it's expired? Because I sniff it." And when I know it, when it doesn't smell anymore, I know it's expired. And I'm,
how do you know you're alive if you have a still, big whiff of
I'm
selenium
still fine from years of sniffing selenium toner. So I might change my WordPress blog to the Smell of Selenium Toner.
Yeah. Oh, that stuff is so nasty. I hate selenium toning. I do it for my finished prints, but I don't like it. Can I give a quick shout out?
Certainly can.
I wanted to mention Click Eric on Twitter. Eric Gold, his pinhole is not his main thing, but he has the garbage can pinhole, which is really cool. And he does homemade pinhole cameras, he does interesting things with them.
Awesome.
Corey, where can we find them? Oh, it's not all about me, you know.
Yeah, I know.
Corey, where can people find your wonderful pinholery?
Currently, I'm only basically on Instagram, and that's at Pinhole Cannon.
with your 2,500 followers or whatever it is.
Yeah, I'm almost to 3,000 actually. I just got more. I never thought it's blowing my mind too, man. I'm just like, wow. My wife took that the other day. She was like, you know, you have almost 3,000 people following you. And I was like, I know, it's freaking me out, man.
Wow.
Like, I always knew I would, you know, be doing photography for fun, but I just never thought anybody would really care, you know, honestly. I mean, so it just blows my mind that, and I try to talk to everybody, whoever comments, you know, or anything. I always try to, I like,
it's always nice with people, you know? It's always nice to comment, and I try not to just fave things, but I inevitably do. But I try and comment, particularly on Flickr, I try, which is a more considered space for me, I try and add some comments.
Right.
As Monica knows.
I appreciate it.
I don't think we need to really tell anybody where you're at, Andrew. Really.
Oh.
Go ahead. I'm just picking. He not.
No, people know. They can find me at Warboys. At Warboys Snap. Everybody knows me.
_ Pinhole.
Well, if you want to just look at Pinhole, then it's Warboysnapper _ Pinhole.
Yeah.
Or you can look at my latest Holger blog on andrewbartram.wordpress, which I put out today. So I've just had the littlest Holger, which is a bit like the Gitswap camera. So it's this little purple Holger camera has been going around, and the rumor has it that Sandeep is behind that. So he's the master, he's the evil genius behind the littlest Holger. And I've printed my WordPress blog about my time with her, and she's now gone off to Denmark to the wonderfully talented Isabel Curtis.
And I'm a part of the GitSwap project, which is Monica Smith is doing, and she'll be on in a couple of weeks, and we're going to talk about that.
Yep,
she's coming back. I think she was our first guest, actually.
She was your first guest, for you and Mark.
Yeah, she was the very first guest we ever had, so we're excited to talk to her. She's coming up in a couple of weeks, so it'll be fun,
Cool. So, Monica, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thanks for having me.
You were awesome, as you Americans say.
Oh, thank you. People, thank you so
when my English colleagues who listen to me on the podcast, and I says, you're turning into an American. You keep saying cool and awesome.
That's when you just say, you respond to them and you say, awesome.
Yeah, man, awesome.
It was awesome to be on.
It was awesome to have you.
Super cool. All right. So, everybody, have a great weekend for listening, and thanks for hanging out. This show is definitely a day late. But it just worked out better. And we're probably going to be, I think, maybe transitioning towards a Sunday recording and letting the podcast out on Sunday. Fridays have become a little bit difficult with going back to work and everything. So I think the rest of the year we are kind of set for Fridays, but probably in the new year we're going to be moving towards Sunday days. So, so we can't say have a great weekend. We can say have a great last of your weekend because it's Sunday.
Yeah.
And a great week. And we'll talk to everybody next week. All right.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. This is show number 34. And we have to wait for Andrew, so we're probably going to start again. Nope, there he is. Oh, my God.
Was I too late?
Yeah.
Sorry, I was coughing.
Can you hear me, Monica?
Yeah, I can.
Okay.
Do you want to start again? I was coughing.
Yeah, we're going to have to start again.
Okay.